Good evening, Truth Seekers. It is Friday. Welcome to the program. This is Mike Malloy. Like a lot of people, I'm just trying to absorb the bulletin that came out about 20 minutes ago that Walter Cronkite had died at the age of 92. It's more disturbing to me than I thought it would be when I first heard the story, or when I first heard the news. You know, Walter Cronkite dead at 92. The first reaction is, he lived a long and certainly notable life. But as the last half hour has gone by, and I've been trying to process this bulletin, it becomes more and more apparent to me that his death represents a lot more than just the guy who used to be the anchor on CBS dying. Certainly for the past, for a very notable part of our history, Walter Cronkite was linked to so many key events, whether it was an interview with Anwar Sadat of Egypt when Sadat said he would go to Israel and work out a peace treaty, or when with the Israelis, when we first put men on the moon, and of course that horrific day about a year into his career as a CBS anchor person when he announced that John Kennedy had died in Dallas, Texas at 1:42 in the afternoon, if I remember. Cronkite, of course, was from a different era, and you have to be over a certain age, I'm afraid, to really get what he was about. No offense to people under the age of 40, but it just doesn't, I don't think it computes if you are under the age of 40. I was asking Kathy right before we went on the air, and she said, no, she remembers newscasts with Walter Cronkite. The problem, of course, is that the gap is that people under the age of 40 have been, and some over the age of 40 have been inundated with media since for the past 35, 40 years, certainly, just inundated. But believe it or not, there was a time in this country where there were three networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. That was it. And middle America chose, to a large extent, chose Walter Cronkite. That famous statement attributed to Lyndon Johnson when Cronkite made a visit to Vietnam in 1968. And when he returned, he said that war was had come to a stalemate. This is 68, that it was a stalemate. The United States could not win it. And he advocated a negotiated peace. And the story is that Lyndon Johnson was watching that broadcast. And Bill Moyers was an aide to Lyndon Johnson. So we can pretty much rely on this quote. Moyers said that when Johnson watched that evening's broadcast with Walter Cronkite, he said, if I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America. And it was shortly after that that Lyndon Johnson said he would not run for re-election. Because I think Lyndon Johnson understood that the war was out of his control, and always had been, and that it was based on lies. There is argument as to whether or not Lyndon Johnson knew that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a lie, but that's history. On October 27th, 1972, Cronkite went on the air and did 14 minutes, unheard of, 14-minute report on Watergate. He had an 8-minute segment 4 days later. And it was Cronkite's reporting on the Watergate event that put the story clearly before millions of Americans for the first time. And as a result of Cronkite having the courage to state categorically what Watergate was, of course, that resulted in the, you might say, the Watergate hearings. Not that Cronkite inspired Sam Ervin or anybody else to put together a special committee to investigate the crimes of Richard Nixon. But Cronkite was right there to let the American people know how serious this was. We, of course, don't have a Cronkite, haven't had a Cronkite for years. We have people who are not really managing editors of their newscasts like Cronkite was. We have people who report pop events rather than serious news reporting. And with the exception of Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, there's no one on the air who has the courage to attack, literally attack, the members of the Bush crime family when they were destroying the country. Nobody. Nobody had the courage to do that. And, of course, Olbermann is on a cable network. So a lot of people say, well, that doesn't count. He's on a cable network. Well, it does count. But CBS, of course, has become a whisper of what it used to be. NBC and ABC really are no longer relevant in terms of reaching people, although they still reach people. I think the combined nightly viewership of those three network newscasts is probably around 20 million, which isn't much out of a population of 300 million in the country, but it's about the best they can do now. But Cronkite was from the Edward R. Murrow era, Richard C. Hodlett. Oh my God, who else? Brinkley, David Brinkley, Chet Huntley. Just a whole pantheon of people who reported the news, who let Americans know what we needed to know. I've heard old recordings of Edward R. Murrow reporting from London during the Blitz, before we got involved in World War II, and it's astonishing that that we had people like that, reporters, anchors, whatever they're called at the time, who could bring the stories so clearly to the American people and with emotion. Of course, none of these guys were pretty boys at all. They weren't handsome like Brian Williams. They weren't slick like Katie Couric. They weren't patronizing like who's the guy on ABC, Kathy? No, he's on NBC. Geez, I'm drawing a blank. All I can think of is Cronkite. So it became clear to me about 30 seconds after hearing this that a story has ended. An era, definitely an era. I realize he hasn't reported for a long time, but he's been alive and now he is not. And again, I believe a hero is nothing but a sandwich, but I have to say that Walter Cronkite had a greater impact on this country than probably anybody in media during a certain period of this country's history. When I think of the collection of idiots on Fox, or when I think of people that present themselves as opinion makers like Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, it's just scary. If you have a comment on the passing of Walter Cronkite, we'd like to hear it. Number's 877-996-2556. Seriously, I'd like to hear what you got to say. 21 past the hour. The Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st. See dealer for details. All right, let's see if we got our phones fixed. Bruce is calling from California. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
When I heard about Walter Cronkite, it was just sad. I remember specifically watching during the Kennedy assassination moment, and I remember seeing that live, and then watching Lee Harvey Oswald get blown away on live television a few days later.
Yeah.
I specifically remember watching CBS coverage of the moon landing and watching Walter Cronkite as he spoke about it and whatnot. And it was just, like you said, there was something about the man that people trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sad day. I mean, I understand he's 92 and we've all got to go sometime, but it's still sad.
Yeah, he represents a time when we were having in this country, in a manner of speaking, a common conversation, and it was like Cronkite set the tone, or at least the subject matter of that conversation. It didn't make any difference where you lived or who you were. You pretty much knew, or someone in your family knew, what Cronkite had said the night before, and it kind of it linked us. You know, I'm not saying we all had to agree with what he said. Matter of fact, a lot of people didn't agree. They figured he was just too extreme, too much of a pacifist, whatever, which he wasn't. But you know how it is in this country. But
right. But
Cronkite represented, I think, an era when there was still the belief, at least I had it, that there was a possibility of getting us all on the same page and doing some remarkable things. Or at least getting us all on the same page so we could look at what was going on in this country and try to make some changes. But
the comment that you made earlier about what Bill Moyers had said about LBJ saying, if we've lost Walter, we've lost the war.
Lost Middle America.
And that is so telling. It really shows the influence that the man had.
Yeah. And I think it also showed that what I just mentioned, that most of us were, we weren't broken up into a million little pieces, which is what cable has done. It's what the internet has done. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but it broke us into little pieces so that we don't have a common conversation, a mainstream conversation going on. We have all these little conversations over here and over there and up there and down there that do nothing to bring us together on any issue whatsoever. You really have to struggle these days to try to link up, even with, Facebook and Twitter and the internet and cable and so on and so forth. You really have to struggle to link up politically the way it was done in the Cronkite era. And I think he had something to do with that, you know?
I agree. It's a sad passing, but anyway, I'll let you get on to other calls.
Okay, thanks a lot.
To speak up.
All right, Bruce, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. And again, by common conversation, I don't mean to suggest that, we were all together. We weren't all together. There was an awful lot of fractionalizing that was starting to occur, especially around the issue of Vietnam, especially around the issue of civil rights. But Cronkite, I think, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, provided kind of a stabilizing point. And again, whether you agreed or disagreed with what he was reporting, Cronkite had the ability to stop people, not everybody, but to stop people from going berserk. Uncle Walter or whatever you want to call him. Bad events occurred in this country during his tenure anyway. There was no denying that. The Chicago riots in 68, all the assassinations, the stuff that happened in that 20-year period that he was CBS anchor person. There was a lot of stuff that happened. And it wasn't that Cronkite was a person who calmed us all down. But he was a person that we knew would tell us the truth. That's one thing. And in that respect, I guess, there was some calming. Even while it seemed like the country was exploding, you could listen to Cronkite and feel connected or feel like it's not going to stay this bad. It is going to get better. This idea that he was the national uncle, I agree with that. I think he fulfilled that role. You know, every family has that guy, or used to. I guess not anymore. Hell, families are so broken up now. But we all used to have, I had an uncle like that who came back from World War II, a sergeant in the infantry, and had a mustache like Walter Cronkite. And my Uncle Kerwin, to me, was, I don't know, he just represented something that my parents didn't, my teachers didn't, the Sunday school teachers didn't. And I think Cronkite was that way, too. We'll be right back. We're taking some calls on the death of Walter Cronkite. Stay with us.
It's all in a day. It's the part in life when it's all in the words to fate and circumstance resign. Goodbye.
So far away, doesn't anybody stay?
Before the hour, email from Cindy. Mike, it seems all of that generation are checking out. Walter Cronkite was a voice of sanity and a trusted voice who we graciously allowed into our living rooms. He told us when Armstrong touched the moon's surface and when JFK was assassinated and when Apollo 13 was almost lost and so much more, so very much more. But Walter Cronkite was a journalist and we no longer have his professionalism. We are all lesser for his passing. Cindy. Yeah, I realize there is also the cynical point of view, but regarding Cronkite or anyone in media, but I'm just not going to take that point of view tonight. I really am not. Cronkite was part of the culture, and I thought he was a solid part. I may not have agreed with. I didn't pay attention all that much as to whether or not I agreed with whatever point of view he was putting out there. But I don't think he was really putting out a point of view. I think he showed some emotion at certain times, some genuine emotion regarding events that to not show emotion would have meant that the person reporting those events was an automaton or a robot. Steve is calling from Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You just hit the nail on the head. He didn't put his view out there. He put the news out there.
Yeah.
And two times he showed emotion. One was, of course, when JFK was killed in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
Which was just, you know, just pure emotion. And the other, at the other extreme, when they landed on the moon.
Yeah.
And he was just... He was over, like they had mentioned earlier, he was kind of speechless, and his comments were, wow, gee, wow. He was dumbfounded, as we all were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm 57, and I remember, God, probably from about 6 years old, just seeing him on the news.
Sure.
And he told you the news, and I don't remember a whole lot of people going, oh, well, you know, he had a slant. No, no. That wasn't Walter Cronkite.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a sad day, but it's also a great day to remember. Man, this guy, he goes back to World War II. I learned something tonight that he flew either he flew missions or he flew with missions in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And, whew.
Yeah, I know. It's just one more of those events tonight that that I think indicates that, you know, the country really, we're certainly not, we're not what we used to be. We're not. And I don't mean to put too much on the death of one man. I really don't. But I'm just saying he represented something about this country. And, I think what he represented was, an aspect of this country that was, decent. I'm not saying, you know, good, bad, indifferent, but decent.
Yeah.
And just so you know, Cronkite was, one of eight journalists that were selected for an Army Air Force training program. This is back when the two were still combined.
Right.
It took him on a bombing mission to Germany aboard B-17s. And Cronkite manned a machine gun, according to his memoir, until he was up to his hips in 50-caliber shells. So he also covered the Nuremberg war trials, and he reported from Moscow from 46 to 48. And so, yeah, he had the kind of background that would certainly qualify him to be America's reporter. Hey, listen, thanks, Steve. I appreciate your comments, okay?
You bet.
All right, man. Thank you. Dave. Dave is calling from Salt Lake City. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
This is my first time calling your show, but I'm a long-time listener from back when you were on Air America quite a few years ago. And
well, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And it certainly is a sad day. I represent a little younger listening audience. I think I was born in 66, and so I did get a chance to experience Walter Cronkite quite a bit as a kid growing up. And the thing that I think I probably remember the most about him is, yes, he was a very trusting voice, and that's something that you really don't get in today's news today. And it is sad to have to talk about a man in length, but, you know, he was part of a culture of civility on evening news. And I remember sitting down with my family at dinner time, and we'd put on, you know, Walter Cronkite. I remember just eating dinner in front of the tube watching him. And, you know, I guess for me, I didn't really know a whole lot at the time when watching him, but he was a very trusting figure, at least to me. And now that I've gotten a chance to see him on some documentaries and hear him and look at past news coverage, I never felt as though, even though, you know, like you said, you may not agree with the guy, you didn't feel like he was feeding you a line of BS.
Right, right.
And, you know, he and, you know, of course, there's Dan Rather. He's still alive. And, you know, I think once he goes, it's going to be a sad story about how he left the airwaves. But anyway, one thing I wanted to mention about Walter Cronkite is, wasn't he the pioneer of sort of bringing the newsroom into the view of the TV screen, where you have the news people in the background?
He may have been. I'm not, I don't know definitively, but yeah, that was a style that CNN adopted from the get-go when CNN first came on the air in 1980. They used that open newsroom, here's all the nuts and bolts thing, and it probably was CBS. Hey,
yeah.
Dave, I got to move on. Thank you, okay?
And that's the way it was.
That's the way it was. Don't be a stranger. Call in. Don't wait for somebody else to die, all right?
Thanks, Mike. And hey, one thing.
Yeah?
Even though you're a serious guy on the radio, you crack me up all the time.
Good.
At nighttime in my shop, and you're a funny son of a bitch.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I would hate to think that I just make people want to go open a vein.
No. Thanks, Mike.
All right, Dave. Appreciate it. It's one of the nicest things anyone said to me. Beth is in Los Angeles. Hey, Beth.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a brief comment about Walter Cronkite. I mean, I think it was just yesterday you mentioned that it was 40 years to the day of when they first launched Apollo 11.
Yeah.
And I just think, boy, what a what a time for him to Walter Cronkite to go. I mean,
I know.
During such a time, and I, as a younger listener of your show, my younger sister, she's quite a bit younger than me. She's 19, and she was the one who told me that Walter Cronkite had passed. And the thing is, if you have any sort of appreciation or interest in what happened during the latter half of the 20th century, I mean, you're going to know who Walter Cronkite is, you know? I mean, my sister was absolutely just floored. I mean, granted, she does not have any recollection whatsoever about when he was on air, but she understands, completely carried America through this drastic social and cultural upheaval.
Yeah.
And what's really sad, what I think the saddest thing about all of this is what's going to happen now, in the sense that, you know, this man who carried such a huge legacy is not, his passing is not going to have half as much attention paid to it as the whole John and Kate scandal or Michael Jackson or what have you. It's just absolutely tragic.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Beth, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Take care. Take care. Just a couple of points here. We're going to talk about this into the next hour. Normally on Fridays, we've been giving away the podcast subscriptions. We're probably, we have a bunch to give away. We're probably going to do it Monday night. Cause I'm just not kind of in the mood for it tonight, if you know what I'm saying. the last person I want to talk about is George Bush and his craziness. But anyway, if you're online, we'll take your call when we come back from this break, and then probably at least one or two segments next hour. Because again, there is significance in what Walter Cronkite represented in this country for a 20-year period. And prior to that, before we all got to know Uncle Walter, he was a journalist. He was a newsman. Certainly not in the style of anybody that we have on the air today. So anyway, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
That you're joining in the turning away. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting its shroud over all we have known.
Before the hour, we're talking about the death of Walter Cronkite that occurred about 2 hours ago, 2.5 hours ago, at the age of 92. Lauren writes in, Mike, I'll never forget that on Letterman's first post 9/11 show, he had Walter Cronkite on. And Walter said the most important thing that needed to happen was for the government of the United States to be completely open and honest with the people, not to have secret wars or agendas. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. I knew right then the opposite was already happening. And Michael writes in, one more thing about Cronkite. He was really nuts about the space program. Just read a brief bit on him on the Media Coder blog at New York Times, which said that he was on the air for 27 of the 30 hours that the Apollo lander was on the moon. From that, one gets the sense that he wasn't about to miss any of it because he wasn't just doing news, he was an enthusiast, and it showed. That might have been why the moniker "the most trusted man in America" stuck. He liked the country enough to criticize it when it fell down and applaud it when it stood up. And an awful lot of people recognize that as a valuable thing in their own lives. Yeah. AJ is in Brooklyn, New York. AJ?
Michael, thank you very much. First of all, thank you very much for doing this. I think not only for us old folks, but for the younger generation, it's illustrative and instructional to hear that once there was a man whom everyone trusted, who you could trust to tell you honestly and without bias what was happening while your backs had been turned during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to know that once it happens, so that maybe there's a glimmer of hope that once it could happen again. I think it shouldn't be lost on anyone that his passing also occurred on the 40th anniversary of the moon landing, which is just an interesting coincidence that we lost the footprints of one giant as the foot on the anniversary of another set of footprints.
Very true.
And I think Bob Schieffer was probably the last of the old school. After the Bush crime family succeeded in deep sixing Dan Rather, and Schieffer took over. And everybody knew that they were going to eventually get a talking hairdo in there.
a talking hairdo. I hadn't heard that one before. I like that.
he was in there for a little while, and he was the last old style. I think that we may see. Now, if I want to see ugly reporters, I have to turn to the BBC, but that's a whole other story.
That's a whole different story. Hey, thanks, AJ. I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks for checking in.
And Mike, thanks again for doing this.
Oh, yeah. Had to. Take care. And I don't mean to make this, I told Kathy before the show, we got this word, like everybody else did, right before showtime, and I don't want to make this self-indulgent. By that I mean he was an important figure to me. I don't know how important he was to the people who listen to this program. I have no idea. But I think it's appropriate to do this acknowledgement. I think for one reason, we're kind of in the same business here on the Malloy program. Don't misunderstand that. I mean that in the broadest possible sense. I'm no more in the in a Walter Cronkite league than I'm in the Joe DiMaggio league. I'm just saying a communications business where, you know, you talk about stuff. We don't do news on this program. It's entirely different. But it just feels kind of like, I think the kinship that I feel with him, I never met him, but I think the kinship that I felt with him and still do has to do with a time in this country that I grew up in, that I came of age in. And like I said earlier tonight, a time when it was still possible to get an idea of how most Americans felt. And that's impossible now. We're going to play a little bit of Adagio for Strings here as we go into this break. And we'll be back. We'll take your phone calls on the passing of Walter Cronkite for a while. So do stay with us while we I think we're going to have Adagio for strings. There we go. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. We're talking about the passing this evening, a couple hours ago, of Walter Cronkite. Probably less so because he was an anchorman for a television network, and more so because of his connection to a very specific time and place. In the history of this country, and that would be the United States, for a 20-year period from the early 60s to the early 80s, where and when so many events occurred that shook the foundations of this country, but also had lasting effects around the globe. Cronkite, there's no reason for me to try to describe what he did. You'll have plenty of that in tomorrow morning's newspaper, and I'm certainly on television retrospectives on his career. But we're going to take some phone calls, and if you're just joining us, normally on Friday nights we do a giveaway of the podcast of the Molloy Show that come to us courtesy of so many listeners who want to get the program out. We'll do it Monday night. I just don't feel like doing it tonight. I hope you understand. A couple of emails and back to your calls here. Bridget writes, Mike, thanks for doing this. For those of us who lived through those times and remember what it was to feel as though there was a voice on the news whom we could trust, this is important. For those who didn't have that experience, it's imperative to bear witness to a time when we didn't automatically doubt everything we heard or read, because real journalists like Cronkite actually valued facts and truth. His professionalism and his ethics are, unfortunately, long gone. Perhaps a reminder that such a thing once existed can plant the seed for it to grow again. I have missed his voice since he left the airwaves, and I am sad that he is gone, Bridget. Bill in Paso Robles writes, Mike, can you remember and comment on Walter Cronkite's delightful and stern erudite commentator sidekick, Eric Severide? God, I loved him, Bill in Paso Robles. Yeah, Eric Severide, that's true. He, with that kind of over-the-top-of-his-glasses look, even though he didn't wear glasses, which was quite a trick, if you can imagine that. But Eric Severide was, he was the, I don't know what he was to the Cronkite Show. He was the, as Bill said, he was an erudite commentator. Eric Severide probably had a better control of language or a better knowledge and use of language than anybody ever on television news, if you remember Eric Severide. And yeah, he was on Cronkite's program quite a bit. As, I don't know, the editorialist, would that be... tip of the hat to Eric Severide, too. Kate writes, he was important to me, too, like a comfortable, trusted uncle. I'm flashing on all those CBS hours as a child, a young adult, and an Air Force wife with a husband who was a radical supporter of the war. Needless to say, we had lively dinner conversation. I, too, am feeling sad and wistful and kind of nervous. It's so important to tell the ones we love that we love them. Thanks for not doing trivia tonight. I, too, am not in the mood. Kate. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you would like to comment on the passing of Walter Cronkite. All right? You want to do this? We'll do this a little bit longer. I feel it's important. If you feel it's important, too, great. Margaret is calling from Dallas, Texas. Hey, Margaret.
Hi, Mike. Hi, everybody. Good evening.
Hi. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. I'm 42 years old, and I actually got to meet him.
Really?
And that was a pretty cool story. At the time, I was a senior, a journalism student at California State University of Fullerton, and I was interning at the local NBC affiliate in Burbank, California.
Mm-hmm.
And a fellow intern and I had heard that Walter Cronkite was going to be here with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. This would have been about 1989 or 90.
Uh-huh.
And so we ran down there, and sure enough, they had finished taping, and we kind of, I can't believe we actually had the moxie to do this, but we kind of ran up behind him and introduced ourselves that we were journalism students, and when he turned around, it was the most jaw-dropping vision, because Walter Cronkite had these eyes that were, I'll never forget them, they were so blue and so light that it's almost like they were drawing you in. You could almost see his soul, and I know that sounds like such a cliche, but I will never forget that when he turned around.
Huh.
With connected eyes. But he was so charming, and he wanted to know what we were doing and why we chose journalism. And it was really an exciting experience that I'll never forget. And, you know, again, I'm 42. I was born on the day in 66 when we started the secret bombings through Cambodia. So I was very young, and I missed that whole Vietnam era. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've always been interested in is something that you talk a lot about. You obviously went through the 60s. You talk about, the assassinations, the war, and I missed that. So it's hard for me to put my hands around that, but honestly, I don't know how that generation survived that, because I feel already overwhelmed at what I've experienced in my life.
Sure.
And with past 8 years of the administration.
Well, you're making a very important point here, and I think this is the kind of the crux of what we're talking about tonight. I don't know how we got through the 60s either, or for that matter, the first half of the 70s. And I think this is where someone like Walter Cronkite, and to a lesser extent, some of the other anchor people, rather than incite Americans to, rather than making us nervous, what Cronkite did was calm things down. And I don't know how he did that. It was just, his persona as it came through our television screens. We have to remember that in the 60s, again, there was not that much media out there, a lot of radio stations, but television was CBS, NBC, and ABC, and that was kind of it. So, Cronkite, just by virtue of his acceptance, I think is the right word, by Americans, was able to, with just a look, with a comment, with a sentence, he was able to calm things down. Plus, with what he didn't do, he was able to calm us down. He didn't go for the sensational. You know, the streets of Chicago might be erupting during the Democratic Convention. The blood and gore in Vietnam. Nixon lying through his teeth. Any of those events were hard to deal with. Trust me on that one. But Cronkite was able to somehow just pour oil on the water, I guess is a way of saying it. He didn't try to minimize it. He didn't try to maximize it. That was the thing. He tried to report it. And at the same time, in that calm reporting, I think he helped keep the lid on things in this country, because we came so close in 68, this country just violently convulsing. I can't tell you. So
I'm very sad to hear the situation with Dan Rather, because again, I thought he was a pretty strong voice. And it is truly sad that it came from CBS, because CBS has always been the bastion, you know, the last beacon of hope for solid journalism. And mm-hmm. to see Dan Rather treated with such disrespect, and I truly hope he wins his lawsuit, although, you know, that's probably the last hurrah that he will ever have.
Yeah.
To see that man beaten down is really shameful, and he didn't deserve that.
No, he didn't. He didn't. Margaret, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Don't be a stranger. Call as often as you like. Yeah, CBS was called, some of you will remember, it was called the Tiffany Network. CBS Reports was investigative journalism, I think, at its finest. Edward R. Murrow's reporting. Stuff that just doesn't occur anymore, mostly for economic reasons. I think there are journalists out there who, given the resources that some of these guys had, and they were given resources for the Times, I don't doubt that we still have journalists like that available. It's just that we have instead people like Glenn Beck who... Oh, you know what I'm saying. The hour. This is the Molloy program. We are spending some time tonight talking about the passing of Walter Cronkite from the perspective, I guess, of his not just his integrity, but also his being, for better or for worse, representational of a 20-year period in this country that, had it not been for Cronkite, might have erupted into all kinds of bad stuff. You never know. Jim writes, I believe the big four in radio news during World War II at CBS were, William Shire, Ed Murrow, Douglas Edwards, and Walter Cronkite were all together. They were all together at one time or another in London from 1939 on. Yeah, when you hear some of these names, I've forgotten Douglas Edwards, I think Doug Edwards was more radio, although he did do he did wind up on television also. But when you do these, you take a look at these names. This is one of the reasons that Oberman started saying "Good night and good luck," which was Ed Murrow's tagline. When you look at what they did, these people in broadcast news, starting in radio. And the heyday, of course, was the build-up to and the beginning of World War II. But when you look at how they reported, there was an element. They were not dramatic. Although Murrow tended to be that way a little bit, but as far as I'm concerned, when I've listened to old recordings of his broadcasts, I never thought that the drama was anything other than what was there to begin with. Cronkite, as I said earlier tonight, Cronkite, just by taking off his black horn-rimmed glasses and touching, touching the bridge of his nose when word came that Kennedy was dead, and John Kennedy. And, I mean, it just spoke volumes. I don't think anyone can do that anymore. When Cronkite would sit there and kind of smile because we had landed on the moon and say, wow, how about that? Gosh, you know, with that teenager's look on his face, how could that not connect with people? And that's impossible now. Nobody does that. Nobody could do that. There's nobody in television news. There's nobody in television. There's nobody in radio. There's nobody who could do it. These guys did. And certainly Cronkite, I think, was at the top of that list. Back to your phone calls. Dave is in Long Beach, California. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. I myself am just lamenting the fact that, you know, we'll probably never have a man whose reach will be as great as his was, as fractionalized as the media is these days. You know, someone like an Oberman, unfortunately, is not going to be known by as many people because of what was it? Ken Arulata wrote in that book a few years back. I read about television that it all started back in 75 when a little cable outlet called HBO asked if they could hitch a ride on NBC satellite, and that's kind of where the fractionalization all began.
Yeah, that's so true.
But, you know, you may not know how you got through the 60s and 70s, but let me tell you, I know how I got through the last 8 years of the Bush administration, and it was because of you. I swear to God, Mike, I was ready to slip my wrists on many occasions, and it was only you that got me through. You know, you never mince words. You always brought it. You always bring it. And I just thank you so much for that.
Well, that's very kind. I get pissed off.
Yeah. Well, I always enjoy every one of your broadcasts, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate what you had to say, Dave. That's very kind. We are talking about the passing at age 92 of Walter Cronkite. He died early this evening. I think the news was around 7 o'clock Eastern Time, and I think it is proper to devote some time on the program tonight to the occasion of his death, his life, really, and what it represented. It's just, again, a passing of an era that should be noted, and with some trepidation, I think. If you want to join in the conversation here, we'll keep going a little bit longer. The number is 877-996-2556. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's time for the
25 before the hour. We are talking about the passing earlier this evening of Walter Cronkite at the age of 92 and the significance of that to the United States, to this culture. And I fully recognize that most of the people alive today in this country were not alive during the years of the Cronkite and the other big guns at CBS Radio and CBS Television as they reported the news from World War II, from the London Blitz, from Vietnam, from just about every place. Cronkite was the guy who had the duty, and certainly on CBS, because that was the network I watched on November 22nd, 1963, reporting the assassination of John Kennedy. On that day, he briefly lost his composure in announcing that Kennedy had been pronounced dead at Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas. He took off those horn-rim glasses, they still call them that, and wiped away a tear. And in doing that, he registered the emotions of millions of people who were watching. His reporting, after making a trip to Vietnam, his reporting from Vietnam and then coming back caused Lyndon Johnson to say, according to Bill Moyers, if I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America. Was Cronkite a supporter of the war? I think Cronkite, being of a generation who had experienced war and knew its ultimate futility, I don't think he ever supported the war in Vietnam or Southeast Asia. I think he supported his country until he realized that it was based on a lie, the entire operation, and B, that the people of Vietnam were not going to tolerate an invader. If it meant the death of every last Vietnamese, they had thrown out the Chinese, they had thrown out the Japanese, they had thrown out the French, and they were damn sure going to throw out the United States. And I think Cronkite understood that. This is from Steve in Phoenix. Mike, now that Walter Cronkite is gone, Daniel Shore, who can still be heard on NPR, is probably the last remaining member of the Murrow Boys. Being a kid in the 60s, I remember that regardless of which network you watched, you were always guaranteed responsible journalism. Huntley and Brinkley on NBC, Howard K. Smith, another Murrow Boy on ABC, Walter Cronkite on CBS. Now we're left with Brian Williams, Katie Couric, and Charles Gibson. What a motley bunch of fools. For sure. What else? His coverage of Watergate. Again, let me reiterate that. He spent 14 minutes on a report, according to this, on October 27, 1972, 14-minute report on Watergate, followed by an 8-minute segment 4 days later. And it so pissed off the Republic, Nixon, that Charles Colson, who was, one of Nixon's criminals, wrote a letter or made a phone call to Richard Salant, who at the time was the head of CBS News, and demanded that Cronkite get off the story. And, of course, Salant more or less told him to take a long walk on a short pier. Kennedy, I don't know if how many people are aware of this one, but Kennedy, during the Wisconsin primary in 1960, Cronkite questioned Kennedy about his Roman Catholic religion, Senator Kennedy at the time. And as Cronkite recalled in his memoir, Kennedy was so pissed off about that he called Frank Stanton, then CBS's president. I guess Richard Salant was the head of CBS News. Frank Stanton, CBS's president, to complain, Kennedy did, that questions about the subject had earlier been ruled out of bounds. Couldn't ask Kennedy about his Catholicism. And Kennedy then reminded Frank Stanton that if Kennedy were elected, he would be appointing members of the FCC. Cronkite wrote, Frank Stanton, quote, courageously stood up to the threat. So, you know, they don't like, politicians just don't like reporters. And I don't get that. You know, it was so important to the framers of the Constitution that, it's in the First Amendment. As we've said before on this program, it's the only occupation, that I can think of. It's the only one guaranteed protection in the Constitution. Not doctors, not preachers, not lawyers, journalists. So, that's what we're talking about tonight. Frank is in Columbus, Georgia. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for what you do. I sent an email earlier. I don't know if you got it or not, but one of your callers earlier said you've kept me sane during these last 8 years and continue to do so in this mad world. Is there any chance of, I mean, you know, we documented that Walter Cronkite was a journalist. Mm-hmm. We have very few now. Is there any chance that we're going to get Cheney prosecuted?
You know, this is kind of ironic since we're talking about it with the passing of Walter Cronkite. If Cronkite were still doing an evening newscast, I'll bet he would be, in his manner, turning up the pressure, reminding America that we're a nation of laws. And none of the anchors now do that ever. They're all mealy-mouthed. I don't care who they are. I don't care if they're on broadcast or cable or whatever. But Cronkite would, just like he devoted 14 minutes to the Watergate affair, and said that, here's what he said, Watergate, this is a quote, Watergate has escalated into charges of a high-level campaign of political sabotage and espionage apparently unparalleled in American history. Now, there are two qualifiers there, the word charges and the word apparently, but He understood the importance of a journalist, a reporter, and how important it was to not just pretend like this stuff wasn't going on. And
right.
Can you imagine, arguably, the Bush crime family has been much more corrupt and much more poisonous and much more destructive to this country than the Nixon crime family was. Single reporter, not a single anchor person, with the exception, like I said, of Keith Olbermann, not a single anchor has the courage to just say it. To just, during all those years, they knew what was going on. Not one of them had the courage to do it.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. And, I mean, Watergate looks like child's play compared to what went on.
Mm.
You know, prior to 9/11 and after 9/11, the invasion of Iraq, I mean, Bush and Cheney are war criminals and they deserve to be tried. And it's just not happening, and it's maddening to me.
Yeah, it is to me, too. Hey, thanks, Frank. Take care, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, appreciate you checking in. I think that's the part that is infuriating to me, the lack of integrity. I said courage, but I think it's integrity on the part of journalists. I noticed this when I went back to CNN in 2000, I'd been out of the news business for some time. And even though I worked for CNN International the second go-around, what was astonishing to me, and I would come home from these crazy shifts I was working at the time and tell Kathy, when we first moved back here, we were broke and depressed and stayed at a friend's rooming house. And you know, I would come back from a 14-hour shift at CNN International, and Kathy was working as a maid at the time, you know, cleaning houses and doing stuff. But I would say I can't believe what has happened. You know, when I worked for CNN the first time in, 82, 3, 4, shortly after, a couple of years after they had started, they were doing journalism back then. They didn't have, you know, anchors who were stars. There was no Wolf Blitzer. There was no none of these pretty ladies that they have on in the morning on CNN. No John Roberts. You know, it was anonymous anchor people who did the news, and they did it with a staff of writers and producers behind them, of which I was one. And when I came back in 2000 and went to work for CNN, I would tell Kathy when I come home, I can't do this. I just can't do it, because it's astonishing. We would have a pre-show meetings with the supervising producer, the senior producer, supervising editor, and five of us writers. And we would sit there and talk about, we'd look at the rundown, the menu of what was going to go on the air. And it was amazing, not what went on, but what deliberately was left off, you know, left off the menu. What we were not going to talk about, not going to write about, not going to report. Unbelievable. Before the hour, we're talking about the passing of Walter Cronkite at about roughly 7 o'clock tonight, Eastern Time. Regarding the censoring of stories, the things you don't hear, email here says it has a name. It's called the propaganda of silence. And that's very true. I don't know to what extent Cronkite did that. I would hope that to no extent. You know, he was the managing editor of CBS Evening News for a number of years. I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who made it very clear that the survival of a free people, that would be all the white people who put this country together, you know, stole it, used slaves. I know. But I think what Jefferson said was something along the lines that if the establishment of this democratic republic was to survive, it would absolutely require a free and vigorous press. And I think that's one of the reasons that profession is mentioned in the First Amendment, not the Fifth or Ninth or 50th, but in the First. The absolute necessity of keeping us free from religious craziness, which had destroyed so many lives in Europe, keep us free from that, and maintain a free press where people could take up the profession of reporting or journalism, whatever it was called back then, but to keep us informed. How else are we to know? And Cronkite, I think, is one of the few, or not one of the few. There are a few left. Cronkite was one of them who represented that belief in journalism that it was necessary if this republic was to continue. That it was necessary that the people be informed so that we would know what to do. How can we know what to do when we're not informed? And this, I think, is the problem that we're faced with now. You know, NBC, owned by a weapons manufacturer, General Electric, and a major polluter. I mean, Jesus Christ, how are we, well, you know, I'm not going to get on one of those soapbox trips tonight, but, we're talking about his passing. Tim is calling from Los Angeles. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Great. Hey, I really appreciate the show and appreciate what you do every night.
Well, thanks.
Listen, I was born in 60, and I don't know anybody who had any more of a five-day-a-week influence than Walter Cronkite, except for maybe Captain Kangaroo. And that's the honest-to-God truth.
Well, you know, you're right.
There's a whole generation of us kids, all about that time, watching Captain Kangaroo in the morning, coming home and watching Uncle Walter at night.
You got it. And both of them had that ability to just calm down hyperactive children and homicidal adults.
There you go. But he was, can't even put into words.
I know.
He'll be very sorely missed.
Yeah. Yeah, even though he's not on the air and hasn't been for a long time, it was always like you knew he was there someplace. And
correct.
If we had some sort of an emergency that absolutely required somebody to come on television and calm us down, they would have brought him out of retirement, I'm sure, and stuck him in front of a camera. But, yeah, he will be missed. Thanks, Tim.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
He always knew the right thing to say.
He did. He did. He always knew the right thing to say. You're absolutely right. Thanks.
Thank you again, Mike. Appreciate
all right.
It.
All right, Tim. Thanks for checking in. You know, that I think Tim just made a very very good point. Yes, Cronkite had writers. He was one himself. He was not like so many anchor people on television now. They read what's put in front of them. They don't even make a secret of it anymore. They just stand there with sheaths of paper in their hands and read what's in front of them. But Cronkite was a writer, and what Tim just said, he knew what to say. And I think sometimes that is as important as how you say it. I mean, the two go hand in hand. And I can't think of anybody, again, with the exception of, I keep coming back to Keith Olbermann, oddly enough. Because I think, you know, I do think that Olbermann also certainly does not have the gravitas that Edward R. Murrow or Cronkite or hell, Dan Rather. Olbermann is entirely different, of course. But what Olbermann does have that very few people have who are in television anchor positions, whether it's cable or broadcast, is courage. And kind of an attitude of screw you. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. If you don't like it, tune out. A. B. If my owners don't like it, they'll fire me. But I'm going to say it. I am going to say it. And I just wish that there was more of that. Don't you? Huh? And then you look at these creepy people that make up, Fox. Who's the guy who had a moment, had an epiphanous moment the other day? We talked about Cameron, what's his name on Fox? Cameron, I don't even know. It doesn't matter. But Shepard Smith, that's right. Shepard Smith made some, I forget now, it's immaterial anyway. But it's my understanding that where it concerns cable news, more people watch Fox than CNN or MSNBC. Now, I don't know if that's specific times during the day or not, but that fact, if it's a fact, just causes my stomach to churn. I mean, it does. And I get evidence of that every single day. So do you. I mean, just listen to the Fox, news listeners on any of the right wing talk shows. Read some of my email. Well, you do. I share some of it with you on Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag. It's just so insane. All right. If you're on hold, stay there. We're going to take your call. We have to break here. We'll come back post haste. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. We are talking and listening about the passing of Walter Cronkite earlier this evening at the age of 92. And what that represents to you, to me, to anyone. Maybe it doesn't represent anything. We talked about whether or not we're going to talk about this tonight because he is from a period in American history and a period in American journalism that neither of which exists any longer. Obviously, you can't exist in history in a present moment. Oh, never mind. But it was Cronkite, of course, was much more than an anchor person or a newsreader or somebody who sat at a desk on our television sets and did 15 minutes. It was 15 minutes of news to begin with and went to 30 minutes or the protests of affiliates. 30 minutes for news? Why? Remember, the function of television is to make you forget, and that's its only function. Call it entertainment, call it infotainment, call it news, call it whatever you want to call it. The purpose of television is to make you forget. And I don't think that's what some of these iconic news personalities were about. They were not trying to make people forget. They were trying to make people be aware and then either absorb what was being reported or do something about it. They were not advocates for a certain type of action. At all. They were journalists. They reported what was going on, not just in this country, but all over the place. And this, of course, is what Cronkite, since we were talking about him tonight, this is what he did. And he was a touchstone for this country. I won't necessarily say he was a unifying force. He would probably laugh at that. That's way too out there to make a statement like that. But he was a touchstone. And he had the uncanny ability, or we did as a people, to check out how's Walter Cronkite going to react to this? What's Walter Cronkite going to say about this? And his reaction to a certain event could, for millions of us, determine to some degree what our reaction would be. And that's the part that I think is so missing in today's the people that come into our home every single day via television. They have no more connection to you and me than they have to the better way to say it, the only connection that television or anchor people have, with one or two exceptions, is to their agents. They don't give a damn about you and me, just where's the next gig. And believe it or not, you folks under the age of 35 or 40, believe it or not, there was a time when journalism in this country was a profession that a lot of people aspired to, wanted to be a journalist for the because it represented getting to the truth. It also represented preserving the republic. It did. Woodward and Bernstein, I think, reactivated that feeling with their reports on Watergate, but it died fairly quickly. It just died. We are to the point now, or we were, I don't think we're even at this level now. If you remember during the end of the 90s, the unending focus on Bill Clinton's penis, it just would not stop. It just went on and on and on, 24-7, television, radio, Bill Clinton's penis, Bill Clinton's penis, Bill Clinton and his girlfriend. Remember that? That's what passed for news. At the time, I was working at WLS in Chicago, and I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe what was happening. And as a result, I guess as a reaction, I would go on the air every night, try to bust up on the right-wing dunderheads who were making that story. Just everything else faded away. Bill Clinton lied about a BJ with his girlfriend. Oh my God. So we are so far removed from the Walter Cronkite, Eric Severide, Richard C. Hotlett, William Shire, Edward R. Murrow, Douglas Edwards era, and Dan Rather era, as we could possibly be. We just are. And I'm uncomfortable putting Rather in that group anyway. Dan Rather was a good reporter from Vietnam. He was a good reporter in, was it the 68 or 72 convention where they almost threw his, tried to throw him out of the convention. But journalism or a free press, I think all of us know this, is key to whether or not you have a free people. If you don't have a free press, you don't have a free people. In any country, if you have a press that has become nothing but a whore for corporate America, no offense to sex workers, but if that's the case, then people become either ill-informed or uninformed, and I'm not sure which is worse. When you think about what is put out on this in this country 24/7 on right-wing talk radio, which is 97% of radio, when you think what is stuck out there every day for people to absorb, it's astonishing. It's shocking that any of us are A, still sane, or B, aren't at each other's throats in a literal way. But this is what the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the rest of these pigs, this is how they make their money. As I've said before on this program, they run a protection racket for corporate America, with their lies and their deception and their nonsense. But there was a time, honest to God, folks, there was a time when, reporters, anchor people, knew exactly what, the definition of their profession. And I'm damn sure not saying that all of them were all that good at what they did. I'm sure that there was an awful lot of pro-America attitude in what they did. They're from a generation where being pro-America, though, to them felt like the thing to be. This is before, or in spite of, what we came to find out about some of our actions, what we were doing. I think one of the reasons, I remember when Cronkite wrote off the U.S. efforts in Vietnam in 1968, I always had, well, not then, but later, I had the suspicion that it was because he understood that the people of Vietnam were kind of like the Americans who were fighting the British in the end of the 18th century. We were not going to give up, nor were the people in Vietnam. They simply were. We could drop nuclear bombs. They were not going to give up. And I think that's what Cronkite figured out. That on aside from all the propaganda being put out by the Pentagon, being put out by Robert McNamara, and to a lesser extent Lyndon Johnson, and this whole cadre of American politicians, in spite of all that, I think Cronkite was one of the few people in the news business who could see behind that or beyond that and say, you know, it doesn't make any difference what we do here. We are not going to win. And from 68 until we got out, how many thousands more American soldiers and Marines, how many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Indochinese had to die? So, sorry. Rob is calling from Clifton, Tennessee. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Mike.
I'm sorry, Bob.
yes, you know, I was born in the late 30s. I'm in my seventh decade now, and I grew up listening to Murrow and Cronkite and the people you mentioned on the radio.
Bob, let me put you on hold a second, okay?
Certainly.
All right, I got to do this break, and I probably should have waited to pick you up. We'll come right back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Thank you.
The Pontiac Summer Closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st, 09. See dealer for details. It's about 22 past the hour, continuing the discussion tonight. Unplanned, certainly. Well, that was kind of a dumbass statement. The discussion on your take, my take, on the death early this evening of Walter Cronkite at the age of 92, who he was and what he represented. So, back to your calls. Now, wait a second. Rob, let me put you back on hold because I was talking with Bob in Tennessee. All right, Bob, thanks for holding on.
Yeah. Yes, you know, the elders are leaving us, Mike.
Yeah, for real.
And that means we're becoming the elders.
Watch out.
Well, it's a new responsibility. Every stage of life presents a new one.
Yeah.
And I guess our responsibility now is to do as much as we can to pass on the direct experiences we had that the younger people, 40, 30, even though they're adults and in charge or about to be, they need to know these things about the past because there's so much obfuscation now and there's so much corporate control and there's so much corruption
and so many lies being told. I mean, just flat out lies being told
and multiplied. And yes, certainly, and it's hard to sift through it. Now, I think Cronkite survived. What I think happened was, and I agree with the descriptions and interpretation you've been making, but they were the voice of information for the home front during the Second World War.
Right.
They were the source. And they made the transition after the Second World War into television in the most positive manner of in the development of television, which came about after the war as far as spreading through the culture and affecting us all. And they were very successful because they had presented their news live. They had been news reporters prior to it and worked in print, so they knew condensation and how to get a point across well.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the transition because television and radio were live at that time.
Right.
And that's one of the things in the equation. I agree with the fragmentation and multiplication of sources and such. But one of the things that has happened is that tape was invented. You're old enough to remember bloopers that used to be.
Sure.
Those were human moments
right
on the television because television was live. You know, the letter writing is to the telephone like movies are to television.
Mm-hmm.
Only television has been turned into movies because it's all pre-recorded, it's all scripted, it's all edited, and it's just like a movie.
Well, you know,
they warped our culture because the media itself has not fulfilled its reality in our culture, which is instantaneous communication visually as well as orally.
Well, the other thing, too, Bob, that and Bob, thanks. I want to move on because I want to get as many people in as I can tonight. The other thing about news reporters, and he was a lot more than that, of course, but the other thing about people like Cronkite, in addition to knowing how to write, they also, and how to condense, as you pointed out, they also knew what stories were important. You would no more hear Eric Severide or Walter Cronkite or Douglas Edwards reporting endlessly on the death of Michael Jackson or Frank Sinatra or whoever the iconic pop singer was back in their time. It would not have happened because they would have understood, as I think, these people who work in media today understand, although they can't do anything about it, the old timers would have understood that those stories about the death of a pop star, the death of an entertainer, whether it was James Dean back in the 50s or no matter who it was, it did not demand that kind of wall-to-wall coverage. I mean, Jesus, God in heaven, we just came out of what? 2 weeks, and it's still not over, of endless coverage of the death of Michael Jackson. I said the only people his death really affects are his family. And I got a lot of emails that said, boy, you're crazier than hell. You know, quit picking on him. You don't understand. You know, what are you, too old to understand Michael Jackson? I just read the emails and delete them. But the point is, people like Cronkite knew the importance of attempting, anyway, to inform us. What we did with the information was up to us, but attempting to inform us about the things that we needed to know. So, yes, writing, yes, condensation, but more importantly, I think, selection.
Fairly well. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, baby. I'm on the dark side of the road. But I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. But we never did too much talking anyway. But don't think twice, it's all right.
Is your child this?
The Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone. Like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st. See dealer for details. It's about 25 before the hour, and we're talking about the death of Walter Cronkite this evening. Debbie is calling from New Jersey. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My first recollection of Mr. Cronkite was I was in third grade, and we got sent home from school early that day. It was November 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
And I got home, and all the adults were home. Everybody was sent home from work.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was bawling.
Yeah.
Just bawling.
And it went on for 3 days, remember? Four days.
It went on forever.
Yeah.
And for me as a little girl, it kind of made me scared of Mr. Cronkite.
Really?
You know, because, he brought bad news. But
yeah,
he was a truth teller.
Yeah, that makes sense, though. It makes sense that a kid would react that way, yeah.
But the thing that we lost with him is that, he really believed in the concept of reporting news and no editorializing.
Mm-hmm.
And all you see is editorializing
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Yeah.
You know, report it as news. And it just burns me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand. There's a way of editorializing, as you put it, too, in the way you select the stories. And that you're going to report on that particular newscast. And that's what I was referring to right before the break. The selection process of what gets talked about is key to whether we're conscious of it or not. It becomes key of what we consider to be the more important story. Is it the killing of civilians in Pakistan because we are sending drone aircraft overhead with missiles? Or is it Michael Jackson's hair getting caught on fire in a Pepsi commercial 25 years ago?
Exactly.
They're given equal weight.
Exactly.
And so that selection process is what is just absolutely horrifying. But well, I get what you're saying about being a kid and being afraid of Walter Cronkite because... yeah, he did. He brought bad news, didn't he?
You know, but, you know, then I grew up a little bit, you know, and you know, I learned about the Vietnam War and everything else, and I realized he was a very middle-of-the-road person.
Right.
And being an anti-war person myself, you know, the day that he came out and said, you know, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Was the day that we knew that, you know, we won. But, you know, the other thing, too, is like that commercial that you have, Total Transformation.
Uh-huh.
I think we need to do that for, like, the Congress and the Senate.
I hear you, Debbie, loud and clear.
Okay, well, you have a good night.
Thanks. You too. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, Cronkite, I think at one point he revealed his political persuasion. It might have been in his biography, his autobiography. And I think his political persuasion, even though he had Eisenhower was apparently a very good friend of his, but he was a Democrat. And I think that is that was the irony of Kennedy, Jack Kennedy, getting his bloomers in a wad because Cronkite questioned his religion and how that would apply as a candidate or as a president, which at the time was a legitimate question. The only other person that had run who had been a Catholic, I think, was who, Al Smith? I probably have that wrong, but Cronkite acted in so many ways as the voice of us, the voice of us. So the question to Kennedy was a question that a lot of people in this country, I realize it's hard to believe that, you know, 50 years ago, whether or not someone was Catholic was an issue that had to be discussed. It, especially now that, what, 7 of the 9 Supreme Court justices, are assuming that Sotomayor is confirmed, are Catholic. Or is it 6? I know the vast majority of our Supreme Court justices now are Catholic. But I think that's the other thing that Cronkite did that was key to that sense that America had that we could trust him, that we could rely on him, was the fact that he would ask the questions that we didn't have the voice to ask. And maybe not all of them, of course not. I mean, he couldn't. The anti-war movement, Cronkite never took a stand as being an anti-war advocate or being a pro-civil rights advocate. But I remember also, and I've seen a piece of tape tonight, when he reported on the death of Martin Luther King Jr. In Memphis. And again, you could look at Walter Cronkite for a cue as to, no matter how hard he tried to conceal being a real journalist, he, you know, strictly report the facts. But no matter how hard he tried to conceal some of his emotions, whether it was assassinations or landing on the moon or conventions devolving into disaster, he would betray or reveal, would be a better word, just enough so that that it wouldn't necessarily influence the way we felt, but it would connect with what we were feeling anyway. And to see somebody like Cronkite connect with us, I think that was the, I mean, when's the last time you felt that Katie Couric or Brian Williams connected with you? With you? You understand what I'm saying, I'm sure. Rob is calling from Minnesota. Hey, Rob.
Hey, you know something? It's great to talk to you again, Mike. The best to you and your family. And
thank you.
Walter Cronkite, I remember the end of his program. It was where that's the way it is.
Yeah, and then he would say the date, didn't he? That's the way it is, Wednesday, July 14th.
It was where he had a half an hour and he told the news, you know, not like Rush Dumbo or Sean Idiot.
or even Brian Williams, who is supposed to...
I mean, when you really come right down to it, the news is where you give out the bad news like Debbie was just talking about. But the whole thing is, it's really the news.
That's true. That's
you
true.
Know, but the one thing is really shocking to me is where nobody brought this up, and it's where I got a letter from this organization, and it's Drug Policy Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter Cronkite signed on to it about five or six years ago,
mm-hmm.
to be able to take and decriminalize decriminalize drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the whole thing is where can I give out the website?
Sure, go ahead.
www.drugpolicycorrectspelling.org.
Drugpolicy.org.
And the whole thing is where, you know, I mean, he realizes, you know, I mean, here, even at the end of his life, it's where he can be able to have an impact on something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's make it right, because the whole thing is we've done a lot of things wrong, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate you checking in. Thank you. Yeah, he certainly wasn't a newsman 5, 6, 7 years ago when he signed on to that organization, as Rob pointed out. But that was the other thing about Cronkite. I always had the feeling that, well, had I known his politics, I probably could have debated what I would have perceived as his inaction. Which would have been asinine on my part, because he was a news person, but he could be an advocate, and I think one of the genius aspects of Cronkite I mentioned earlier tonight was the fact that he could be an advocate by the way he took off his glasses, or the way he touched his hair, or the all those subtle yet powerful nonverbal communications through body language that television, that was the other thing. Television just all of a sudden exposed us to that. You never saw, obviously, body language with radio reporting. You had to use your imagination. Listening to Edward R. Murrow report from the Blitz in London, with the bombs in the background and the tenseness in his voice was one thing, but watching the actual body language of someone like Walter Cronkite as he reported the news was something else entirely different. And I think I don't know which was the more powerful. They both were powerful, but it was the cues that were given through body language. I think that's what was remarkable about Cronkite. Ted is in Washington, D.C. Ted, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a child of the 60s as well, and Walter will be sorely missed. He is, that whole group that you mentioned earlier was really the last of the real reporters that did the evening news.
Right, right.
As you mentioned, that the rest of them are good at reading papers.
Yeah.
But the other thing I wanted to mention is the whole focus of the news on the Bill Clinton issue and the way it droned on all that time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet now you have this nightmare that showed up with these guys that are in the family,
right,
and the whole C Street organization. You don't hear anything about that on any of the three major news networks.
That's right. And you know, we've been remiss on that too, because I wanted to get to that story because I'm not a news guy. But I think it has that story needs to be talked about. Hey, listen, Ted, I got to leave it there, pal. We're just almost flat out of time. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Tell me it can be done by your life's the courage to carry on. Heroes appear like a friend, clear a path for light flame. As time goes,
it is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew tonight and all this week. Ben Birch, who is the technical advisor. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, our ethical advisors. And Catherine Bay, who's our engineer and producer. Back to your calls. And again, thanks for participating in the program tonight. We normally don't devote an entire 3-hour program to the passing of a person. And I don't know why we don't. We just don't. But Cronkite, the death of Walter Cronkite tonight, I felt, and so did Kathy, was important on several levels. The journalist level, for sure. His obvious love of his country, the kind of love that is, I guess the current phrase is tough love. His dedication to the truth, and the fact that, with one or two exceptions that also are fading very fast, Cronkite is the tail end of a generation of people, mostly men, because of the times, mostly men, who were dedicated to what Jefferson said. I think it was Jefferson, about if this was to be what the framers were trying to get it started to be, a democratic republic with rights that transcended just white property-owning males, if any of that was to happen, then a free press was absolutely necessary. And look where we are now. Steve is in Portland, Oregon. Steve, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike, a couple of things about Walter Cronkite. Number one, this man jumped into Normandy with the 101st Airborne in 1944 on D-Day.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity doing that?
No, I don't think so.
And secondly, I was a charter member of Vietnam Veterans Against the War in 1971 with John Kerry, along with my brother and a couple of other people. And Richard Nixon and John Mitchell and a bunch of these bastards were threatening to throw us out with the D.C. National Guard and the Park Police.
Mm-hmm.
And who came down to talk to us but Walter Cronkite? And Cronkite came down and interviewed us and said, look, I'm going to do what I can to intercede with these people and make sure that we don't have the spectacle of the D.C. Park Police, the National Guard, the Marines, and the 101st Airborne coming down and throwing out a bunch of Vietnam veterans, many of whom were quadriplegics and paraplegics.
Mm. Mm.
And Walter Cronkite did that.
Wow.
And again, can you imagine Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or any of these other bastards coming down and doing that?
No, I can't. Nor Brian Williams or Charles Gibson or Katie Couric either. I didn't know that story. That's pretty incredible,
well,
Steve.
Well, nobody knew this story. I live on the West Coast now, but in those days I lived back where you are on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked with people out here since I moved out here. Nobody knows this took place.
Right.
Nobody knows anything about this, thanks to our media.
Yeah.
But, you know, Cronkite had his problems, but, I mean, there's nobody today who can fill this man's shoes, who could even aspire to fill this man's shoes.
That's true. And also, let me say this. I certainly have enormous respect for guys like you and Kerry and the rest of the people.
Well, Kerry sold us out, man.
Well, I know, but I'm talking about in the 70s. The Winter Soldier movement, where people were coming back from the horror of Vietnam and telling the truth, and there weren't very many of you, and you know, I just wanted to tell you I respect you for what you and so many of those people did, and the risk you took.
You're the only guy on the air who's doing what needs to be done, who's talking about what needs to be talked about. So you deserve the credit, man.
Well, thanks.
Anyway,
I was going to say thanks for the story, Steve. I had no idea. It's a pretty powerful story. Thanks a lot for sharing it with us. Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, sir. Take care. No, I didn't know that one. Wow. Steven is in Burbank, California. Hey, Steven.
Hi, Mike. The best thing we can do is just take heart and take inspiration that here is a man who told it like it is, told it like the truth, and told it like the truth that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave us perspective for commentary, for observation, for discussion and analysis. And if he were here today, I don't even think he would be allowed to say the things that we can see and observe. It was good that you mentioned that he understood history about Vietnam, because journalism becomes history, and because he understood history and related it to us, not history journalist. I'm sorry. William Shire.
It's
by association. William Shire.
Right.
All the listeners know he wrote Rise and Fall of the Third Reich.
Right.
And so then Walter Cronkite goes on to try to promote ideals for a better standard of living, for a better America, you know, with this drug policy. And there are a few other things, too, that I get in the mail sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, just all these thoughts about this guy, you know, you just can't get them together. Everything that just comes out, the memories, it's just unbelievable. We have to take heart. We can't quit. We have to do what he does. Right now, there are de facto journalists from the citizenry at large who are trying to do things. And
That's true. I hope there is some success because it's only through informed people that we'll ever get out of this. Stephen, thank you. I've got to leave it there. We're flat out of time. I'll see you Monday night, True Seekers. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. Take care. Have a good weekend. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. I'm Mike Malloy. Keep it lit.